welcome you back to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. I apologize. We apologize for the hiatus. We will explain. It's Dan Canobio. It's former world champion Chris Algieri. We're back in your lives after like 10 or 11 days off. Too many days off, Chris. And we promise we won't let this happen to you guys again.
Yeah, no, I was traveling this weekend. I saw you got to hang out up in New York. And a lot of people are asking about a podcast, man. When's the next one? What's going on? We never went 10 days without doing one. So it was,
I never went. Like, this show has been, I started this show in 2017, the Monday after Canelo Triple G. And I don't think I missed like more than 1 week ever of doing this. But the reason is we have a lot of things in motion right now. It's a lot of behind the scenes stuff, platforms and all this stuff. We do have a one quick announcement. Those that know, or some that don't know, that I was affiliated with John Boyd Media for the last 2 years. This show was on the John Boyd Media platform for the last 2 years. I am no longer with John Boyd Media. Made a very tough decision to move on from there. To chase after some really exciting things that we're going to be announcing early next week. So I want to thank everybody at John Boyd Media. They brought Chris on board. We did our boxing combine. They sent us to fights. We did stuff with all sorts of entities. And in addition to, you know, people that watch this show and also watch the warehouse stuff or any of the other baseball stuff coverage I did there, it was an awesome time. It was a really hard decision. It's been a rough couple of months figuring everything out. But our time at John Boyd Media is over, but we'll always look back at it fondly. And Chris, you got to fight Jake Storielli. So that was probably the highlight of your career.
Yeah. I mean, John Boyd was good. It was a good fit, you know, while we were working together, but as all things, time has come to move on and we are,
and it's going to be
bigger and better.
We have bigger and better things. We have a big announcement at the end of the week, so stay tuned for that. Nothing's really going to change. Don't be alarmed. We'll just have a lot more episodes and a lot more coverage. All right, Chris. People were asking me to get into some things, and you know, a lot has happened in the boxing world over the last 10 days while we were on this hiatus. I mean, Canelo Alvarez is back with PBC on a one-fight deal. Francis Ngannou, I think, still doesn't know where he is. He might still be sleeping in Saudi Arabia right now from a right hand from Anthony Joshua. You know, Ryan Garcia is going crazy. Oh, yeah, Mike Tyson is fighting Jake Paul. This all happened in 10 days. We picked a rough time to stop there. But let's start with Francis Ngannou and Anthony Joshua. Anthony Joshua does the damn thing in Saudi Arabia, shows that there are levels to this game, knocks out Francis Ngannou in the second round, drops him in the first, bewilders him. It lasted about 5 minutes, and in that 5 minutes, I think Ngannou bit on every feint, was knocked down, and according to Ariel Helwani and the MMA crowd, this is a guy that was never knocked down in an MMA fight, obviously never knocked out in an MMA fight, never actually been in trouble. So to see that scene, to see him absolutely laid out was crazy. Was a crazy, crazy scene. I don't like to play that whole MMA versus boxing thing. I think it's for the fans, but part of me was like, yeah, you know what? Like, this was what Fury should have done. This is boxing. Like, boxing won. Like, this is how, maybe this is the end of crossover fights.
It won't be, because at the end, you know, you said that Ngannou might still be asleep. Well, you know what he's sleeping on? A bed of money. Yeah. He made $30 million on those two fights. So no, it's not going to be the end of the crossover fights. It's just far too lucrative for those guys, you know, to come over here. And then that's the thing. They're coming over here for money. They're not coming over here to be world champions. I don't think we're ever going to see an MMA guy make the transition and then become a legitimate world champion in boxing. It's just, the sport is just way too nuanced. It takes way too long to get good at it. You know, people always talk to me like, oh, why'd you go from kickboxing to boxing and not MMA? And my answer has always been, I figured I would want to take weapons away, not add more weapons, that have become more difficult to actually learn. So when more difficult to hone in and focus on two weapons rather than four or even more. Boxing is just, it's just such a highly skilled, nuanced sport. I don't ever see them being able to transition and do it at the highest level. But if there's money to grab, people will do it.
Oh, the WBC, I mean, shame on them. They gave Ngannou a top 10 ranking after the Fury fight. And, you know, we were all excited after the Fury Ngannou fight. I was throwing names around. I didn't think he was going to be able to take down any of the top guys at heavyweight. I thought that he was going to get the fights. Like, all right, this is an intriguing name now. Put him in with Joshua. This is before Wilder lost. Wilder Ngannou at a time was an intriguing fight.
I still like the Wilder. I still like the Wilder fight.
Right. I would not be shocked. We'll get to that in a second, what Ngannou should do next. But, you know, it was a talking point for a while after Ngannou Fury that Ngannou should now go and fight some of these other heavyweights. Just a business move, and it's just what he waited his whole career to do. So there is a lot of that going around the last couple of days. Like, oh, told you so. Yeah, the WBC giving Ngannou a top 10 ranking is, in hindsight, pretty silly. A lot of the opinions out there afterwards were pure hyperbole. You know, people were thinking that he could beat Joshua, or that he could beat a Parker, or beat a top heavyweight. No, I don't think he can, because Anthony Joshua showed in there in less than two rounds the difference, the nuances, a novice versus a pro. And Luke Thomas, our friend at Morning Combat, did a really good breakdown. And I went back and rewatched the 5 minutes, and it was just like simple things, but it was also just showed like the simple aspects of the techniques of the sport can really carry you. And for Joshua, it was just the lead hand. Like that lead hand, that lead jab, he was either using it upstairs and downstairs. He was switching, and Ngannou was biting on every single one, Chris. And then he lands a freaking massive shot in the first round, drops him, because Ngannou started switching stances. He was bewildered in there. It showed you what Fury should have done to him. And it just, in terms of the technique, it was only 2 minutes long, or two rounds long, but it just showed like Joshua just went in there and did not play with his food.
Well, I mean, Ngannou bit on every feint in the Tyson Fury fight. Tyson just didn't close the show, and he didn't do what he was supposed to do. He didn't do what Anthony Joshua did this Friday. And yeah, it was the lead hand. You could see in that first round, Ngannou was very uncomfortable with the jab. That's why he switched southpaw. And Joshua, big amateur background, Olympic gold medalist, has, you know, however many professional fights now. As soon as he switched, straight right hand right down the middle, which is fundamentally what you do against a southpaw. The right hand splits the guard, so you throw that as a lead. Put it right down the middle, clips Ngannou, puts him down, and Ngannou's never been hurt. Yeah, as you mentioned earlier, he's never been hurt in an MMA fight. He's never been hurt in a boxing ring. He got hurt in the first round,
Bro. And
it was all downhill from there.
That knockout punch was, that might be the most lethal, cleanest knockout punch in a big time prize fight I've ever seen. Like, he wound up from like across the ring, and then knockout, like his legs were going out. It just was like, it felt like an exclamation point. It felt like what should be the end of crossover fights. Dana White afterwards, of course, you got to take Dana White with a grain of salt because of his history with Francis Ngannou, says this should be the end of crossover fights. Sean O'Malley fought this past weekend. Sean O'Malley has been calling out Ryan Garcia and vice versa. After the Ngannou did to Fury, we started talking about, this is probably going to, you know, raise the stakes now for more crossover fights. Some of the best strikers in the UFC are going to go after the boxing money. I think this put it to bed. I think that emphatic of a knockout and that clear in just two rounds, I think the interest is completely gone for MMA versus boxing fights.
Yeah, I mean, again, the interest will be there because of the money, but in terms of them being competitive, I think we put that to bed. AJ not only put Ngannou to bed, he put this whole MMA versus boxing thing in a boxing ring to bed. But yeah, I mean, listen, Joshua looked awesome. He was clinical. And you could tell he knew exactly what was going to happen. Did you see the warm-ups that Ben Davidson was doing with Anthony? It was exactly what they did. It was the exact punches that landed that knocked Ngannou out. It was a jab, catch, right hand. Jab, catch, right hand. Because they knew that left hook was going to be coming from Ngannou. Put that jab on him a few times, and it was just a little pull counter. Shoom, boom, with that first shot. And Ngannou was very hurt when he got up. And Anthony literally just walked across the ring, put his left hand out, and then bombs away with the right.
And shout out to Anthony Joshua. Activity matters, everyone out there. 4 fights in 11 months. Same thing with Joseph Parker. Similar amount of fights in the same time span, and he beat Zhilhai Zhang, which we'll talk about too. But shout out to Anthony.
He beat Wilder and Zhang.
Unbelievable. And Joseph Parker's
back, man.
We'll talk him. So shout out to Anthony Joshua. Activity matters. 4 fights in 11 months. He goes in there all week long. He's not acting a fool. He's not talking trash about Ngannou. He's actually praising Ngannou and hyping him up. Does that in the ring. Zero celebration. You know, just like a workmanlike thing afterwards. He takes a selfie with him after, tells him, in the ring, I'd like to, you know, contribute to your foundation, and, you know, don't give up. And I love what he said afterwards. They gave him the mic and he just goes, it is what it is. This is what it was supposed to be. And it just raised up Anthony Joshua. And it also made Tyson Fury look foolish once again. He looked foolish in the lead up to the Ngannou fight, looked foolish inside of the ring, looked foolish afterwards. The whole Usyk stuff. I mean, Fury looked like an absolute dosser, as he would say, by association, by the way that Joshua did that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, AJ's back in a big way. You got to look at AJ now to be favored to fight everyone in the world except for Usyk. You know, even Tyson Fury right now. I think a lot of people are looking at this like, hey, that version of Anthony Joshua probably beats Tyson. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm sure a lot of people are saying it. So very interesting place to be in the heavyweight division right now.
Yes, good point, Chris. That's a good segue, because where does Anthony Joshua go now? What do we think about Anthony Joshua, the heavyweight? The four fights in 11 months, it seems like he got his killer instinct back. He's working beautifully with Ben Davison and Lee Wiley. Obviously, he's going to have to wait a little bit, because Fury revealed during the lead-up to this fight that Fury Usyk has a rematch clause. So they could fight in May, and then they could fight again in December. They say that the winner of that will face the winner of Joshua. So now we're looking at Joshua, who just had a great, stretch of activity. What is he going to do? Is he going to sit around and wait? I thought maybe he could fight Zhang if Zhang would have beat Parker. Like, what does Joshua do next? Does he just get back in there and look for bodies?
I mean, if we're going true meritocracy, it's going to be Irkovic. That would be the fight that would make the most sense. It would be, but also the most dangerous. And like you said, Joshua has some big things pending with this Usyk Fury debacle and how that seems to pan out. Do we want to see Joseph Parker and Anthony Joshua again? I don't know if there's a real demand.
Sizzle
for
me. I got no sizzle out of that.
No sizzle. But also Parker and Zhang have a rematch clause as well, so they have to square that away.
Rematch clauses for interim belts is a wild thing.
So wild. Yeah. So it kind of leaves Anthony Joshua out there without a dance partner, especially any kind of big name ones. I mean, Wilder, I know he's coming off a loss, but I think there's still some intrigue for that matchup. It's still a dangerous fight because, you know, Wilder can punch, but he looked so disarmed in the fight against Parker that I don't know. I don't know if we're ever going to see the same dangerous Wilder again. And at this point, if they do make that fight, is it another two-round destruction but for AJ just to go out there and blast Wilder out, which is very possible?
Well, the Saudis are looking for these big fights, right, Chris? They're looking for these marketable ones. Like, obviously, meritocracy, I agree with you. It should be Parker, Joshua, be a rematch, but it actually doesn't really have a lot of pizzazz. I mean, I'll watch it. Of course, it's a good fight. It's a fun one. Hrgović, I think I could be wrong here, but after the first Fury Usyk fight, I think that should be for the IBF, the vacant IBF title, which Hrgović is in line for. So Hrgović Joshua could be for a IBF world heavyweight title. That could entice Joshua. And you go down the line, Wilder is still out there. We got to keep in mind, Joshua Wilder was supposed to be this weekend. March 9th was supposed to be Joshua versus Wilder, but Wilder gets upset by Joseph Parker. Fury lays an egg against Ngannou. It's just funny how this all happened, this puzzle piece at heavyweight. We weren't seeing anything at heavyweight for months. And now in the last 5-6 months, so many things have changed. Fury fights Ngannou. Ngannou drops him, and he becomes a viable person at heavyweight. Wilder loses to Parker, and now Parker gets elevated, and Wilder's out of the picture. So now Joshua has to fight Ngannou. Zhang loses to Parker. This is how it should be. This is like makes you think, rather than just stagnation, where we're like, oh, I wonder who's going to fight a heavyweight. I wonder this, I wonder that. So at least we have some movement. And now Fury Usyk, May 18th. So heavyweight division finally is at least moving.
Piping hot, baby. Piping hot. But I think Joshua, you mentioned his how busy he's been. I think he needs to stay busy, stay active. And maybe he doesn't get a big name guy. I mean, he just had a big name guy. He made a ton of $50 million, I believe he made for the Ngannou fight. For a two-round destruction, it's not a bad day's work, not a bad pay for
unbelievable $3.3 million per landed punch for Joshua.
And listen, so maybe he doesn't need to come back with a big name opponent for his next fight, because like I said, Ngannou was a big name. He wasn't that dangerous, obviously, but he was a big name. So maybe he comes back with just another keep busy fight, like he has been the last couple fights. But listen, he's had a 3-fight knockout streak now, Anthony Joshua. He's been busy, like you said. In 11 months, he had 4 fights. And I think a busy Anthony Joshua is not only good for him, it's good for the sport. It's good when Anthony Joshua is fighting. It's good when Anthony Joshua is active. And heavyweights, I mean, there's a lot of dangerous guys out there for Anthony.
How about the last 5 months for Ngannou to put a bow on this discussion? The last 5 months for Ngannou, he gets the Fury fight. He knocks him down. The picture will be immortalized forever of him standing over arguably this generation's best heavyweight. Fast forward a few months later, there's a picture of him now with his leg behind him, his head in the air. His face doesn't even look like him. Absolutely laid out by Anthony Joshua. And that's combat sports, guys. That right there is combat sports. One day you're up. You're on literally on top of the world. The next day you're down. But for Ngannou, he's not down. He is winning because he came out on the other side $30, $40 million richer. So shout out to Francis Ngannou.
That's awesome. And he'll be back. He said it. He said he'll be back. And I believe him. I believe he will be back in a boxing ring. And he still has that PFL deal waiting.
His next fight will be against one of the guy that Bader lost to. I'm not big into Bellator, but I know his next fight will be in the PFL cage because they were letting him do these boxing events. And they were like, dude, we need you in that cage. We signed you for like crazy amount of money. So shout out to PFL for being fighter friendly. But yeah, that's that. Chris, this episode is brought to you by our friends at the World Championship Sumo, live at the theater, Madison Square Garden, April 13th. 12 of the top sumo athletes compete in a one-night tournament for sumo supremacy. The last event sold out at the Prudential Center. I was there. So you don't want to miss the best sumo athletes competing for the gold. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com. We'll have a promo code for you in just a little bit. I was at that event in Prudential Center, freaking sold out the lower bowl. It's electric in there, man. Like, it's traditional sumo, but they've added some new, like, modern wrinkles to it. You kind of, I wouldn't say Americanized it, but made it more fan-friendly. It has, like, a WWE vibe. There's a lot of trash talk. But when they get in there, it's electric. They're throwing each other around. Yeah, I'm a sumo guy now.
Dan, this is so funny that you brought this up and like we have this partnership, because I have always loved sumo, and like I'm like a quiet sumo fan and have been for a long time. I remember as a kid watching it on ESPN Ocho or whatever, whoever it was back in the day. But I remember watching it on TV and being completely enamored in the idea of sumo wrestlers, and I've seen documentaries on the way they train and eat and sleep. This is super cool. I'm gonna go. I mean, it's April 13th. You said, right?
We're correct.
And yes. I'm at the Garden?
April 13th at the theater at the Garden.
Awesome, yeah, because April 11th is the finals of the New York Ringmasters, which my nephew is fighting in, so I'll be up in New York for that.
So let's go. So it will be boots sumo on the ground. Boots on the ground and sumo. Bro, I'm telling you, man, it's a cool atmosphere. It's a young crowd. Like, I think it's such a cool thing, and it's just more combat sports, and it's cool that it's here on the East Coast. So, it's really cool. All right, let's head over to our second topic of discussion. Canelo Alvarez will be fighting Jaime Munguia May 4th, Amazon Prime, and DAZN pay-per-view. A lot to go on here. A lot of things happened. Last episode we did, Canelo Alvarez was leaving PBC, and he did leave the PBC, went over to Matchroom and tried to negotiate with Eddie Hearn, and there was a mystery platform also involved. But Canelo goes back to PBC. Al Heyman ups the offer. It's a one-fight deal. He's fighting Jaime Munguia, Mexican versus Mexican for Canelo. It's the first Mexican he's fighting since Chavez Jr. It is the first Mexican, the heaviest Mexican versus Mexican fight, 168 pounds. Pretty
heaviest
cool.
Heaviest Mexican versus Mexican fight. Huh.
Yeah.
That's a little interesting caveat.
That's a little nugget for you. So that is some of the other big news. Canelo made it official about moments after the Joshua knockout. He's up in Big Bear training. I like this fight. Disclaimer. Everyone, if you watch this show, you know that it should be Benavidez.
Yes.
We'll put the disclaimer right across the bottom right now. Canelo Alvarez should be fighting David Benavidez. With that being said, this is probably the second best fight at 168. Munguia throws a shit ton of punches.
Yes.
What are you thinking? Who are you thinking of, Morrell?
I was going to say David Morrell, but this is a more fun fight.
This is a more fun. Morrell is the hardcore boxing. He's like the hardcore guy. You know, he's very good, and he would give Canelo fits. But this is the second biggest marketable fight for Canelo. It's the second best action fight for Canelo. I think Munguia will give him some problems early on. I like it. I mean, it's a shootout. It's fun. Mexico versus Mexico. It's going to be lit at Vegas. We'll be there. It's going to be awesome.
I have to hammer home again the point that you made. It should be David Benavidez. There is no reason that David Benavidez should not be the next in line to fight for these titles, whether he's fighting Canelo or not. He should be getting, they should be stripping Canelo, and David Benavidez should be fighting for these titles if Canelo is not willing to fight him. But that being said, I like this fight as well. Munguia is a very fun guy. He is allergic to bad fights. He throws a ton of punches. And that's one thing about Canelo, especially lately. His output is very low, and it's getting lower for every fight. So you got a guy, Munguia, whose output is going up every fight. Now he's teamed up with Freddie Roach, which I think is a great pairing for these two. I like this fight. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be a shootout. I think Munguia, with his youthful exuberance, is going to push Canelo in ways that he hasn't really had to in a while. And I think Canelo, being the sharpshooter and counterpuncher that he is, he's going to find opportunities because there's tons of holes in the offense of Munguia because he is a face-first puncher. And it's a good fight. And it's Mexican versus Mexican on Cinco de Mayo weekend. I mean, huge stuff.
Especially, you know, I love these, like, I don't mind the Saudi cards, but the one thing that I didn't like, it was just so flat in there towards the main event. It was also 3:15 in the morning, Saudi time. So I don't blame those guys for being dead tired.
I don't know why they did it on Friday too, man. Why it was on a Friday?
It was some type of event the next day. They don't care what days the fights are on over there. But my point being, like, I'm really starting to miss, like, really live crowds. Like Haney versus Garcia at Barclays is going to be really loud. This is going to be an extremely, extremely passionate fan base. It's going to be really – they are the best. They are the lifeblood of the sport. Without them, without Mexican fans, the sport doesn't exist. So I'm really – really,
hey, do we have any Mexican fans out there? Do you have any Mexican guys listen to us?
Of course we do. So tweet us. Of course we do. I can think of many right now off the top of my head. Point being, it's going to be wild inside of the T-Mobile Arena. That whole scene is going to be epic, especially that we need that in boxing more and more. As for the actual fight, like you said, Chris, I could see Munguia having success early rounds, kind of throwing volume in Canelo's face. And one thing we've seen, Canelo, you can disrupt him with volume. You got to get his respect. Charlo did not get his respect. You know, Ryder kind of got his respect. All those Euro guys at 168 did not get his respect. You got to get his respect early. So that's something to keep an eye on. And with Canelo, you're right. He's walking this tightrope. It's Canelo style. Low volume, high accuracy, game-changing power. Haven't seen much of the game-changing power late. He hasn't really had to depend on it. Like we saw in the Kovalev fight, or like we saw in some of the, you know, the fights where he got knockouts late, the Plant fight.
Yeah, Plant. Yeah.
Yeah, so I could see him getting bewildered a little early. See a lot of volume coming his way, but then just getting crisper and crisper as the fight goes on, picking him off, emphatic knockout, emphatic stoppage. He gets on the mic, "Viva Cobra, Mexico, David Benavidez, you're next." And then we're going nuts ringside. You know, we're freaking out. Perfect scenario right there. I just laid it out for you.
I know. And you're being optimistic, Dan, and I'm feeling a little pessimistic today, dude. I don't know. Is it the travel?
Was it the long weekend? Was it seeing all these New York people? Was it the fact you're back in Florida and you really love New York and you wish you were back in New York full time?
No. Oh, okay. Sorry. I feel like I got 4 hours of sleep last night, and I'm not optimistic when I'm tired. So I'm being pessimistic, CA, as usual, and I'm not feeling good about this David Benavidez Canelo fight happening in the future anytime
soon. So he's there going to say, "Edgar Berlanga, you are next, my friend," and the whole place boos, and then they're throwing stuff into the ring, and we're running out of the T-Mobile.
Maybe they'll do it in New York City because they got the Puerto Rican fan base of Berlanga, and then Canelo comes to New York in September against Berlanga. I think that would happen way before Benavidez.
Now you're pandering to me because you know I love New York City fights. Like, I'm really pumped to see Haney and Garcia April 20th. Did you see this, Chris? You're a Keith Connolly guy. Keith Connolly posted a picture at the Garden last night. Daniel Jacobs and Berlanga staring each other down. These two had like always been kind of flirting with a fight, but always like, "Hey, we're stable mates. We're friends. We have the same management company." What's going on with that? Should we text Connolly?
All New York affair, man.
I don't know. On the undercard. What if they put that on the undercard of Haney Garcia?
I don't think it would be that quick. I think Daniel just got back in the gym, so
he hasn't fought in quite a while.
He's been posting recently that he's in the gym. But I mean, he's sparring already from what I've seen. So
I don't hate that fight.
No,
I got such mixed reviews. Like Connolly should honestly pay me because I put the picture on Twitter. It's a great pick. It's like on the floor at the Garden. It's just an awesome pick. And Connolly's in right in the middle of it. I love that. He's cheesing so hard. He's like, cha-ching. Yeah. And
She's getting dinged on both sides.
It's got 560 likes right now. It has 60 replies, and I would say half of them are like, I love this fight. The other half are like, I hate this fight. Very polarizing type of fight. Like, I don't hate it. I think Jacobs obviously hasn't, what does he have, like one fight in the last 3 years? Berlanga is Berlanga. He's improving, but he's far from a finished product. It's an all New York fight. I mean, I don't hate it. It's far worse options out there. I don't think Berlanga will fight David Morrell, who's like technically his, who he should be fighting within the WBA. It's like a fun prize fight. I mean, it's a fun New York prize fight. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I'm with you. I don't hate it at all. I think all New York fighting fairs is nice. I think there's a background. They used to have the same trainers. They have obviously have the same management. I don't hate it. It's one of those fights where like it got presented and I'm like, yeah, okay. I wasn't thinking about that, but yeah, okay.
Right. They're names like that. It got a rise out of people. It resonated with fight fans one way or another. I mean,
there's a bunch of good fights for Jacobs, like Charlo. He could
fight. Was it the right weight?
Yeah.
168.
Yeah, he's in the mix with all these guys. So why not?
Well, you remember that video where he went up to Charlo and was like, I'm touching M's, bro.
Yeah. Yes, of course. That was
legendary.
Man, that made the storyline right there. The narrative for that fight is, I don't think that ever goes away.
Another fight that just
Daniel
vanished.
Hasn't been busy, and Charlo obviously hasn't been doing himself any favors lately. Yeah. But that fight still makes sense too.
Well, that's a good segue because I wanted to talk about now that Canelo Munguia is set, like the reverberations that does mean Berlanga will fight Danny Jacobs? What does this mean for David Benavidez? For David Benavidez, it seems like he's moving up to 175 to fight Alexander Vodzik, and I'm hearing some rumors that could land June 15th as the chief support for Tank versus Frank. Now that right there is a nice pay-per-view. Nice
That's
pay-per-view.
A cool card.
Yeah,
like
June
that.
15th, I'm hearing Las Vegas for Gervonta Davis versus Frank Martin with Benavidez Vodzik as the co-main. I mean, it's just one little rumor I've heard. But the Canelo Munguia sends some reverberations as it does, you know, when you're the A side and you're the cash cow. So, you know, what does it mean for guys like Benavidez, 175? What does it mean for Berlanga, you know, get in line? What does it mean for the business side of things? So it's a one fight deal with PBC. So after May, we go right back to this whole saga again. Where will Canelo sign? Is he going to go back to Matchroom and fight some of the Matchroom guys? Is he going to stick with PBC and get the Benavidez fight? Will Heyman fork over even more money? And I just think it's funny because, you know, the PBC people writing off the PBC once again. And, you know, we even did a whole episode, but it just showed that Al Heyman always has a plan. That guy always has a plan. He raised the money. He got a guy, the Zone fighter, to come fight on Amazon Prime. I know
he
with the Zone too.
He's not going to let Canelo go. He couldn't with the Amazon Prime deal and everything that's been promised in terms of what he's going to bring to an offer. You can't let your
smart
biggest guy leave. So yeah, no, Al's very smart. He gets things done. He's a deal closer, and that's the kind of guy that he is. So it's not that surprising that Canelo has come back. But there was a lot of rigmarole going around with this whole thing. It's crazy. I mean, we found out who he's fighting this past Friday, and the fight's in 6 weeks. It's
saga, man. It's Canelo time.
It always is. It's Canelo's saga.
We're on Canelo time, and now he'll be with PBC for one more fight, and then we'll go right back to this frenzy of how he will end his career. I'm excited for that fight. We'll have a lot more on that May 4th. Final topic.
Chris. Oh, quick. Actually, I spoke to Benavidez's father because they're training down here in Miami.
Nice.
And we were talking about the Vozdek fight at 175. And his dad was saying he's not necessarily staying at 175. They're taking this fight. Doesn't mean that 168 is not down the line as well. So just put that out there.
That's why I think it's a brilliant move on his part. I mean, if he can do it, I mean, the weight.
I like the way the Benavidez people have been moving. They're very smart.
It's yeah. Listen, he's putting extreme pressure on Canelo Alvarez. He's won over the public in terms of who wants this fight. He was willing to accept 8%
split. Over the boxing heads too. Look at us. We're singing his praises all the time.
He's willing to accept the 92-8 split. So he's won over every part of that, which is not a really good split.
What a beast.
Yeah. And he's saying all the right things. And now if he can go up to 175 and, you know, beat Vodzik and get that number one contender spot and await Bivol, better Biev. And if he can still go back down to 116 and keep that spot too, then yeah, this is brilliant career moving for a guy that had a few hiccups earlier in his career. So that's interesting. We'll see if he does it at 175. Chris, should we talk about it? Let's talk about it. Jake Paul is boxing Mike Tyson in the year of our Lord 2024 live on Netflix. They're calling it a global sporting event. Full disclosure, I do collect checks for most valuable promotions. I will be involved in this in some capacity. I will say, there's a lot of opinions on this fight. I will say that this will be one of the most watched fights ever. Not the most. Like Throw Manila or whatever got like a billion. Netflix is everywhere. Mike Tyson is probably top five most famous person in the world. Jake Paul, everyone knows him. Say what you want about the fight, but this thing is going to get so many eyeballs on it.
Quote unquote fight. They're calling it an event for a reason.
Yeah, we don't know yet.
This ain't no fight.
We don't know. We don't know. That's one last thing. We don't know if it has not been reported yet if it's going to be a sanctioned fight. Keep in mind, this is Texas, and they have a pretty loose commission. Or it's going to be like an exhibition like we saw with Roy Jones, where they're kind of slapping each other for 8 rounds, 2 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, but if this is... It's interesting because I don't get any checks on MVP, so I can say whatever I want. It goes against what Jake Paul's been saying that he wanted to do. He wanted to go grassroots. He wanted to fight often. He wanted to be like a real pro. This is the exact opposite. This is like Canelo saying, I'm not fighting any Mexicans, and then he fights a Munguia. You know, like it's guys going back on their words, saying one thing and then just completely going back on it. So I don't love that aspect of it. But like you said, man, I think the Netflix thing is the most intriguing.
Yeah, we'll get to that. That's cool.
I think that's very cool that Netflix is getting involved with boxing. And it takes a guy like Jake Paul to get that done. And listen, let me leave Mike out too. It takes a guy like Mike Tyson to get involved with something like this to get Netflix to come on board for boxing. So we're getting boxing into Netflix. That's awesome. I like that. Mike Tyson gets another payday. I like that. But
big one.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much I like the actual matchup of what's happening, but.
So I had Jake Paul up on the stage two fights ago in December, and it was after his weigh-in, and I was asking him, like, all right, man, this, you're fighting a quote-unquote boxer in Andre August. You know, you told us this is the route you want to go on. But, you know, I know you're going to get that itch. I know you're going to get that itch to fight another MMA guy. I know you're going to get that itch to fight, like, someone out there that only you can, being Jake Paul. And he's like, yeah, for sure. He's like, if something pops up, if something arises on this, like, I want to be a world champion, he says. If something arises and there's something on that path where I get a crazy offer or something comes in front of my table, of course I'm going to look into it. And this is the Netflix thing. And this is the Mike Tyson thing. So I think only he can kind of do this. Jake Paul can kind of go fight a Mike Tyson and then say, all right, my next fight, I'm going to find another Ryan Borland type, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, because he's the money maker.
He's in the driver's seat. He's a promoter as well. So like he's putting on these shows and he has total control. You know, it's funny. He's moving like an entrepreneur. He's moving like a businessman. Very, very Canelo-esque in terms of he's in the driver's seat. He can do what he wants. Canelo does that at the highest level of the sport. As the face of boxing and the money train, and Jake is a money train in his own right, but not so much in terms of, you know, the sport of boxing, but just in terms of the business of boxing.
Right.
So he's moving very smart. That's certainly I don't think anyone's gonna knock the intelligence and the movement of Jake Paul and the way the kid knows how to make money.
And MVP, his company is producing this event, so they're gonna be producing one of the biggest events in the history of boxing or live event. So that's big for him. I don't know if anyone out there necessarily thinks about those types of things, but that's big for his promotional company that is invested in boxing. Like, I do call their developmental shows that are real prospects, and they do have a lot of boxing guys on their staff, like Mike Leonardi. That guy's a lifer. That guy's a boxing lifer. Like, so they are very serious about boxing, but they're also want to do these big time events that push the envelope. I'll tell you what, like I live in New York City, so I listen to WFAN, listen to ESPN radio. Every single radio station was talking about this fight the day it was announced. I listened to Pardon My Take, the Barstool podcast, which is the number one sports podcast in the world. They did a whole segment on it that they were going to watch it. This thing is going to be watched by everyone in the world because it's free, part of your subscription on Netflix. That's the fun and cool nerdy part about this. As a boxing fan, you understand business side of things, and if a sports business side, this isn't a pay-per-view. So Netflix is paying Mike Tyson and Jake Paul an astronomical number up front, and they're going to put this on Netflix as part of your subscription. There'll probably be a ton of commercials during it. That's how they're going to make even more money on this. But this I'm not going to say this is the new model for boxing because there's only...
They're going to stack the card, right? There's going to be real fights on the undercard?
I believe so. I believe there's going to be an undercard. I believe they're going to put some MVP fighters on there and some other fighters underneath that. I don't think this Netflix thing is going to be like the next wave, you know, right away in terms of the future of how boxing will be programmed. But this is the way to get out of pay-per-views. There's one separate way is by giving upfront money. And like they did this in the past, like by putting fights on regular cable, like regular fights on like NBC, say, or ABC. You give the guys a ton of money up front. You hope that it does monster rating. And then you're able to make money on the ads. Like, I don't know if that can happen in boxing because there just isn't that two big fights out there. Like, what fight do you think could land on Netflix that wasn't Jake Paul and Mike Tyson? Like, of the fighters out there? Like, Ryan Garcia?
Canelo. I mean, if they were going to do, like, a Canelo, Crawford fight, that would make sense. Being in, like, that would be a big crossover fight.
Tank versus Haney, maybe. Like, Ryan versus Tank, probably, last year's fight.
Takes yeah, two to Ryan tango. Versus Tank would have done it. I just don't see Haney and Tank drawing a lot of like casual eyes the way that Canelo or Mike Tyson or Jake Paul does. But yeah, no, it would be tough to get the kind of fights. But it opens the door, like you said. And we as fans need to sit here and be like, all right, man, I hope this show goes well. I hope Netflix gets a good feeling out of this thing. I hope that it opens up the door for some a fresh network for fights to land on. But I mean, that's me being optimistic CA, which doesn't happen very much.
So. Maybe you're waking up a little bit. Yeah. That could be from, Netflix could start bidding. They could just be another bidder in the boxing world because it's really, Netflix wants to get into live sports. It's almost impossible for them to get the rights to the NFL, NBA, MLB. You know, those things are, you know, go 8 years at a time. So boxing is a sport where you could come in, pick in, take a little fight here and there. Like Netflix can say,
Wild West, baby.
Yeah, boxing. Netflix can say, hold a second. Boxing. We want to get to live sports. You know, there's these one night events. We could, you know, flex our muscle and throw around a crazy amount of money. It's just one more entity, one more streaming service, probably the biggest streaming service, to kind of maybe get involved with boxing. And they're dipping their toe in with Jake Paul and Mike Tyson. And I think a lot of their feeling on it is going to predicate on how this fight plays out. Like, we don't know if it's a real fight. We don't know if it's an exhibition. Like, I'm shocked by the amount of people in my DMs, amount of people that are replying to our stuff on social media that are giving Mike Tyson a shot in this fight. That leads me to believe that it's going to be watched and people are going to be really into the promotion because they actually think that Mike Tyson at age 58, when he gets into the ring, can take out Jake Paul at 27. That's the power of Mike Tyson. That's the aura of Mike Tyson. Guys in their 50s and 60s are like, yo, back, there's no way Jake Paul is beating him. And younger guys that don't like Jake Paul are like, yo, my dad showed me Mike Tyson highlights. He's going to take Jake Paul's head off. That right there is the lead up for this fight. That's why this fight will do so well.
Power of nostalgia. But again, 58 years old. I mean, I don't think a 58-year-old brain should be getting hit. So that's where I come into play, thinking about the health of right. Mike Tyson. I don't want to see anything bad happen to him, especially, or to anyone. But yeah, no, there's going to be people who are going to go to bat for this. Paulie and I had a we do a debate show, sparring sessions, Paul Malignaggi and myself, and we were arguing this exact point. And I made the point. I was like, there's no way that a Disney kid is going to beat Brownsville, Brooklyn. And it was like, that was the argument. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to be able to argue that. They're like, Mike Tyson, the nostalgia of Mike Tyson is very powerful.
This guy, Danny Quinn on Twitter, just sent me a tweet. I'm as young as Mike. I think this is a great opportunity to show that true life begins at 60. While I wouldn't put him in now with Joshua or Usyk because our motivation is different, I think he can and should wash the floor with Jake Paul because the sweet science begs him.
Nostalgia strong.
This other guy, Mike, is dangerous. He can beat Jake. He looks good. There was a video that came out of him. He was literally in a turtleneck and dress pants. It was a promo, and he's hitting the bag. Still looks kind of good.
Okay. See. All right. So that's Mike is Mike, man. There's nobody like Iron Mike.
One last thing. There's room for everything in boxing. We're getting heavyweight undisputed fight. We're getting Canelo in meaningful fights. We're getting Ryan Garcia and Haney. We're getting Nia Inoue undisputed fights, unified fights, fights of the year at almost every weight class. You can make a compelling case for every weight class right now in the sport besides 147 and 160. So there is room for this type of stuff. I don't think it has any bearing on the sport of boxing. I just think that's like a low hanging fruit. I think it's an easy talking point for people that just want to shit on boxing. Like, this is what boxing has come to. It's not, this is an event. It's a global event. It's a money-making event. It's using your imagination.
Yeah, I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, there's always been these kind of sideshows, not to, you know, really shit on this, but it really what it is. It has no bearing on the sport or the rankings or anything like that. Obviously, Mike Tyson's been retired for how many years? He's had one exhibition 5 years ago against Roy Jones, and he's 58 years old. So yeah, it's not a meaningful fight, but it's eyes and it's money, and this is still a business. This is still entertainment. That's the one thing you got to realize about boxing. It's entertainment. Yeah, it's a sport, but I think that the competitiveness, the meritocracy of it all is not really a thing anymore. At the end of the day, this is entertainment, and we live in an era now with streaming services that everything is for entertainment. Everything's for views. Everything's for eyes. Everything's for clicks. And this is the kind of fight that, or kind of event that's going to get a lot of clicks.
Yeah, baseball has this thing called the Savannah Bananas. They're essentially the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. And they're widely popular now, and they do tricks. They, like, you know, set the ball on fire. They go into the crowd. They do backflips. They do songs. They bring out old baseball players. Roger Clemens, 61 years old, pitched an inning for them last week. So they're bringing out old guys. They're showing, paying tribute to the past, and everyone's fine with that. It's like a substreet of baseball. It's not MLB. It's not even minor leagues. It's entertainment. So I think that's the same lane here. And no one's like bemoaning the Savannah Bananas saying this is a disgrace to baseball. Come on, guys. Boxing is it's a carnival sport. It's been a circus sport for years. This is just the latest. I feel like Muhammad Ali would have done stuff like this. He did stuff like this. He freaking did. Wrestled, what was that guy, Inoki?
Yeah, getting kicked in his legs.
Right, and Foreman fought five guys in one night. And there's been crazy, crazy exhibitions in there. This is nothing new. We're all going to be watching on July 20th. It's going to be crazy scene at Jerry World. 70,000 people that there are allotting for that one. All right, that's our show. We got this weekend. We have, what's his name is in action? William Zepeda. 135-pounder throws...
Maxi Hughes.
Versus Maxi Hughes. I'm happy that Maxi Hughes got a shot after getting robbed by George Kambosos. Don't give him much of a shot.
He's a good guy, man. This is great that he's getting his opportunity. Tough fight. Very, very tough fight. But glad he's getting the opportunity.
Zepeda should win. He throws a lot of punches. He breaks records at lightweight. He is a very underrated lightweight, and he can get his name in there for maybe Shakur Stevenson type of fight or one of the names at 135. That's on Golden Boy. I think Floyd Schofield, who had a really good showing, is also on the undercard too. I know there's a Pro Box this Wednesday night. Am I wrong?
Yeah, we got Pro Box tonight. We got Hot Rod versus Sullivan Barrera, my old friend from the Cuban former amateur and world champion. Very, very talented guy. Losses to Andre Ward, Bivol.
He had one big win, though.
He beat Joe Smith.
Right. That's right.
He beat Joe Smith before Joe was world champion. Sullivan's one of the best guys to never be world champion I've ever seen. Really, really talented. High level guy. But she's never.
A last stand type of fight?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if he's trying to go out on a win or what he's trying to do, because he's a couple years older than I am. He's in his early 40s.
It's old.
I know.
Jerry's 40 now.
Yeah, I'm 40 now.
I saw that Instagram post, man.
Yeah, dude.
Are you gonna start doing juice now and your post 40?
So that was, man. I told you that for the listeners here. So I was always telling Dan, I was like, well, when I turn 40, you know, I've been a clean athlete my whole life, but I'm gonna start testosterone when I hit turn 40. So I was getting ready to do all that, and I started doing all my hormone checks and blood work and everything like that. And honestly, I'm fine. So
you don't need it.
No, there's no reason to start anything.
You're on your way to the Biogenesis clinic, and you're
obviously I can still get into shape. So at 40 years old, it's everything's still working. So
you still got it, bro. I was in the ring with Chris. Yeah, I was in the ring. We shot a bunch of in ring breakdowns, and you still got it, bro. That jab was fierce. It was right in my face. I was scared.
He's still there. The accuracy's there. Timing. I'm always just close to your nose without touching you.
I know. It scares the hell out of me. So be on the lookout for a bunch of in-ring breakdowns, and be on the lookout for a big announcement from us later in the week. We once again apologize sincerely for for the hiatus, but will never happen again. Believe me.
Happen again.
We have some big things coming. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Ronnie, we miss you. We're out.